Good evening. This is Mae Bressel in Carmel, California. This is tape number 396. It's July the 6th, 1979, and it's side one. The bulk of this tape will be on the Kennedy assassination. Some things that interest me in that, because I think that it epitomizes so much that is going on since the time that Kennedy was killed, and I want to share some material with you this week. I do want to say that I went down to San Luis Obispo this week. There was a demonstration down there to fight a PG&E plant. They're building a nuclear power plant just 3 miles from a major earthquake fault that was discovered to be the cause of a severe earthquake in 1927. And in 73, it was confirmed that it was a major earthquake fault. And you have your 6 Mile Island. This is your 3 miles from this fault. PG&E said it would cost in the millions. It's already run into the billions, $1.7 billion, and it's going to go to the customers to pay. I pay $129 for a month for PG&E. But the canyon story is a dangerous place, and there were a large group of people that got together and had a meeting down there, a demonstration. There were about 30,000, and I have to say that something has happened good since Watergate. If you ask, has the world changed, has anything changed? I went to the anti-war demonstrations, and it was a hazard. The rock concerts, the demonstrations were filled with Hell's Angels, violence, angel dust, LSD that was asked with poison, people freaking out, craziness. The government was supplying these things. Read the Senator Church Committee reports on the whole era and the documentation of the Tom Charles Houston plan that was continuing. That wasn't there, and you could see for yourself that 30,000 people, between 20 and 40, were there, and there wasn't one incident of a lost child, of any accident, any freaking out. Serious people talking about serious problems, not interrupted by government stupidity and provocateurs and Haldeman and Ehrlichman types and Segretti types and G. Gordon Liddy and their little drug manufacturing teams pouring in all these medicines to divert their minds from serious problems, which caused that 10-year lapse until a whole new group could get together and say, hey, this world is really screwed up. The Abalone Alliance set this up with a whole group of very fine people. One of the best speakers there was Daniel Ellsberg, because he talked about Jonestown. And we talked about the car going down, and he talked about standing in line and getting your poisons. And he sounded very much like Mae Bressel. Daniel Ellsberg was on to the real meaning of Jonestown, not the media story. And he was sharing some very pertinent points down there with them on that and what was going to follow because of the way we accepted the behavior of these people lining up, what our future has for us. Wonderful musicians and performers, some of the best in the country, were there donating their time. And then there were tables all around with booths, and I have a button collection of 3,000 or 4,000 buttons. Incidentally, if any of you find interesting buttons or go to demonstrations, you can contribute to my button collection. I also collect sweatshirts and T-shirts, slogan shirts, and that's one of the things I like to wear. And apropos of last week's tape, just last Friday, I made a tape number 395 on the back of that sheet, side two. I referred to an article in Omni magazine entitled Space Law about the necessity to genetically refabricate, engineer the genes to make people adaptable for space as long-term colonists, that they may have to be genetically adapted. And I put that on the tape just last Friday. So Saturday, at one of the booths, they had a sweatshirt, which I bought. It's my new favorite. I have favorites. I bought one that said it'll be a fine day when the Pentagon has to have a cake sale to raise money to buy a bomber and parents can have money for all the schools they need. But my favorite, apropos of last week's tape, it was perfect, is called The Nuclear Family. And on it, the father has two bulging eyes and a long nose that looks like a foot and an eye on his forehead, and he's got four fingers on one hand. And he's got webbed feet that I talked about that Merrill Richardson made for pregnant women with their thalidomide children, the drug companies making these webbed feet. The son has course, no eyes or mouth. He's got holes across his face and three fingers on each hand and three toes on each foot. And Mom looks exactly like the space people that are being seen that I describe on the tape. And she has those little kind of funny ears, but no eyebrows and no hair, this tight skin and four fingers on her left hand. And then the cat has two tails and eight legs, and below it says nuclear family. And then the artist, wouldn't you know, the Karma, it's signed MB, so it looks like Mae Russell designed it, and it's along the lines that I'm thinking these days. So I'll have one of my family or friends take a picture of me, and one of these days I'm going to send it along to you tape subscribers, Mae Russell in her shirt, the nuclear family. I think, as serious as things are, one of the saving graces of my own existence is that I do have a sense of humor. And even the gross, if you can laugh and work at the same time, I think it's a saving grace. A lot of people are too serious and don't have fun. And as bad as things are, I have fun working on it. And I also have the fun of knowing I'm working. And today I'm going to do a tape with you. I'm going to apologize in advance. I may laugh too hard. Believe it or not, if I start laughing, you're going to have to forgive me, because it's sad and it's funny. And it's hard to even read the thing without giggling to myself. So I decided, instead of sitting here cracking up, I'd just read it to you and see maybe if we could share it together. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the Warren Commission and the way it worked, because that was really my first love when I did the research. All these other things were a splinter group that came after I realized what was going to happen following the death of John Kennedy. But the Kennedy thing was my real love, and I spent 8-9 years taking those 26 volumes of Warren Commission hearings and retyping them. I guess approximately about 28,000 pages of resettling just the parts where Lee Harvey Oswald, I believe, was an agent of the federal government, and how I knew it and where the evidence was in those books. And the part I want to share with you has to do with the doubles. You know, I'm doing a book this summer. I'm working very hard on it, although I took a Saturday off for the demonstration. That's a conflict. That's why I don't get books done. Should I be out there and be seen? Because the governor of California, who wasn't scheduled to speak, appeared and said that he would try to stop the nuclear power plant, that he would agree to prevent the opening of the plant. And if we weren't there, if I leave that to somebody else to be there, the plant may be open, you see. And people let the Three Mile Island thing go through without a whisper, or the people that objected weren't quoted. And it's important to take time out from the book and just say, hey, count me in. I'm one of you, and each one of us makes 20 or 30,000, and next time it'll be 100,000, and it takes each one of us. So I took time from my book, but I'm working on a book. The title is Doubles, and I'll tell you more about it later, but I don't want to do too much until it's really packaged and pretty tight, except generally to say that there were many, many doubles, that the book that Popkind put out about doubles had six people impersonating Lee Harvey Oswald. Bernard Fensterwald had about 20 pages on it. Robert Sam Anson about 13 or 14. The story of the doubles is, I think, I've chosen it as my first book because I think it's of primary importance in general to understand what's going on in our society today. But there was an instance, one of the many, many doubles that Lee Harvey Oswald had, who was in a barber shop in Irving, Texas. Irving, Texas is 12 miles from Dallas, and it has been verified through all the testimony that he couldn't possibly have been at the shop at the time the man said. They started in the summer and spring, and Lee Harvey Oswald was in Mexico and in New Orleans, and he wasn't even in Dallas, if you believe the Warren Commission. So the barbershop testimony was just one of the many, many doubles. But the testimony was taken, it was volume 10, and the testimony was taken on April Fool's Day, and it was taken by a man by the name of Albert E. Jenner, Jr., who, of course, surfaces at the time of Watergate to assist the Nixon committee through that facade, you know, of representing the President of the United States against his criminal behavior at that time in 73-74. But Albert E. Jenner is the attorney for the Warren Commission, who is selected to interview Clifton Chasteen, a barber who alleges that Oswald was in his shop. Now, Albert Jenner is the attorney for General Dynamics. So the testimony of Jenner with Chastain has to be preceded with a cast of characters. You have to understand who we're dealing with. General Dynamics was the corporation, the company that made the controversial F-111 fighter planes in Vietnam, the TFX. There was a lot of controversy at the time about the contracts, and Fred Korth, who came from Texas, Dallas, Texas, resigned as Secretary of the Navy because of the pressure of General Dynamics, because he also represented the company that was to get the contract. Fred Korth was Secretary of the Navy up to 6 weeks before John Kennedy was killed, up to October the 11th, 1963. And the dates of history are so important to understand. 6 weeks before Kennedy was killed, he was the Secretary of the Navy, and he resigned under pressure because of the contracts that were soon to come to Texas that they were dangling about. It wasn't a competitive bidding operation, and I have the name of a book here. You can read on it or look up in your library the 1963 references to General Dynamics. The contract would end up to be $6.5 billion for this particular corporation. Now, Fred Korth went from the Secretary of the Navy down to Texas to handle a large hunk of the money for the $6.5 billion, get involved with that. And years earlier, Fred Korth was the attorney for Edwin Ekdahl. I've spelt that on the sheet for you, who was the former husband of Marguerite Oswald. Mr. Ekdahl was the stepfather of Lee Harvey Oswald. When his mother divorced Ekdahl, the attorney representing her former husband and Lee's stepfather was Fred Korth, who went on to be Secretary of the Navy and then had financial dealings with General Dynamics. The book, I have one book on just the subject, The TFX Decision, McNamara and the Military, put out by Little Brown and Company in 1968, and this is the story of the contracts and the controversy, so we won't spend time with that. But 5 weeks before Korth left the Navy, and he had left the Navy and was to be down in Texas, John Kennedy was killed November 22, 1963. And 2 days after Kennedy was killed, November 24, 1963, the war escalated. Thanks to Daniel Ellsberg with his Pentagon Papers exposure, and as I say, Ellsberg is going all the way from the Pentagon in his RAND days up to Jonestown, and very powerful these days, and heading a possible sentencing and prison sentence in the next few weeks for demonstrations in Colorado in the nuclear thing problem that he's been following very closely. According to the Pentagon Papers, 2 days after Kennedy was killed, the war escalated, and the war made a lot of money for corporations linked to the Kennedy assassination, such as Brown and Root, where George de Morenschild went to visit in Houston to pick up money and meet Mr. Brown, and also another executive from General Dynamics. They're going to make these airplanes for this war 2 days after our president was killed and he was to pull back from the war, Max Clark. Max Clark was chief of security for Convair, that's General Dynamics that made the TFX, and Max and Gallie Clark were very close to Lee and Marina Oswald. Gallie was supplying food and money and visiting Marina while Lee left the Fort Worth area to go up to Dallas to set up his spy network at Jagger's Child's Stovall, the government printing office that made maps of Cuba, where you need security clearances, where he worked with other agents. He left the Fort Worth area for several weeks and got himself established in Dallas, and then Marina joined him again. But in the interim, Marina was with Gallie Clark, a member of the White Russian. She was a Sherbatov, described as a Sherbatov, a White Russian princess. She was part of the Solidaris, the White Tsarist group that had been funded to the Tolstoy Foundation, the Greek Orthodox Church. Gallie Clark was an aristocrat under the Tsar's regime, and her family was involved, the Sherbatovs, in a book suggesting they assisted in the escape of the Tsar. George de Morenschild described them as the Cabots and Lodges of the old Tsarist regime. So Gallie was visiting Marina in the interim that Lee was setting up his spy network. Gallie's husband, Max Clark, was chief of security for Convair that made the controversial TFX. And Albert Jenner, the man who's to interview Mr. Chastain, who alleges to see one of the doubles, was an attorney for Henry Crown from Chicago, the large holder of stock in General Dynamics. Albert Jenner was the assistant counsel of the President's Commission to Study the Kennedy Assassination. There were contradictions in the appointment of Albert Jenner to the Warren Commission. There were contradictions of every member of the staff that I could run down because I've studied them. But we're talking about Albert Jenner and Barbara Chastain today. One possible motive for killing John Kennedy was to escalate the war in Southeast Asia, where, because it has been documented, he was to pull back the troops. Therefore, any company that made profits off of that war, whose attorney is questioning any member of the Warren Commission, I think there's a conflict. And because Henry Crown has a large hunk of the General Dynamics stock, and he's from Chicago, and Albert Jenner is his attorney, it seems that there was a definite conflict in having Albert Jenner on the Warren Commission staff. There's an article on the Henry Crown Empire, an interesting article. Unfortunately, and I do this sometimes when I'm in a hurry, I have the article and the date, but I have to give you a choice of two papers because many of you are serious researchers and follow these tapes up. It is either the New York Times or the Washington Post, but the date is certain. It was December the 12th, 1976. It's called The Account of Henry Crown, Taking Account of the Henry Crown, and it gives this article a listing of the Crown family major holdings, and at the top of the list is General Dynamics. They had 1,600,000 shares in 1976. That was at the height of the war, and according to this article, they had already, when they bought these stocks of General Dynamics, they had already made a $30 million profit off of General Dynamics. The stock in 1976 was worth $80 million. Their 1,600,000 shares was worth $80 million, and off of our war taxes, because we pay taxes to buy those weapons. This isn't free enterprise. We take out of our pockets to buy those weapons, and they make a $30 million profit during the war years when General Dynamics gets the contracts for the planes that are falling down. In this article, there's other holdings. Hilton Hotels, 1 million shares. St. Louis, San Francisco Railroad, 460,000 shares. Aetna Life Insurance, 400,000 shares. Gulf Oil, 300,000 shares. Standard Oil, 100,000. Houston Natural Gas, 60,000 shares. I'm reading those because those were all involved in Watergate, the Houston Natural Gas and the Standard Oil of Ohio and the Gulf Oil. But these are some of the holdings in the article on the real estate of the Henry Crown family. I cannot understand how Jews left the Tsar's regime, Jewish families like the Sarnoffs and the Henry Crowns, and came to the United States and became Tsars and exploiters and imperialists of their own and raped their own country. I'm Jewish. I do not understand it at all. I know these people. I know the Crowns, one of their family, the son married the daughter of the Shines, who owned the Boca Raton, the Vassar Hotel, where Robert Kennedy was killed, who had been involved in so many other, I don't want to split off too far, but these Jewish American families that came out of the Tsar's regime and the pogroms of this extensive poverty in Russia and came to the United States and raped this country that became their own czars. I know these people, and my family know them personally. I will never understand their mentality, ever, ever, as long as I live. And the Crowns are those kind of scumbags who can make, as I say, $30 million profits from the time they paid for it off of just one General Dynamics stock. But that's another story. The rape of the country by the Jewish immigrants is another tape. I've done one on the Mormons. I've done it on the Pope and the Vatican. I'll do it on the rape of the Jewish empire, and it's sick. I think that's the sickest of all, to leave from oppression from that kind and not invest back into the people, into the country from which you took it. But Mr. Crown has a prestigious office in Chicago. The home base is Chicago, the home of Jack Ruby, Sam Giancana, the assassination attempt on Kennedy that was to take place in November 1st, 63. That's one of the doubles, using the name Oswald there. But if you get Who's Who in America, any year, I suppose, I have some collections of them here. 1972, 73 is one of the issues I have. Albert E. Jenner, Jr., and it gives all of his credentials from the time he was admitted into the bar in 1930, the Chicago office of Jenner and Block, Assistant Attorney General in Illinois from 1956 to 65, Senior Counsel to the Committee to Investigate the Assassination of Kennedy from 63 to 64, Director of General Dynamics, and his home is in Illinois. The address, if you ever write to these people, maybe you don't know, if you go to the library to Who's Who, you can write to these people and tell them what you think of them and what scumbags they are. Okay, here's the cast of characters, and we're going to go, if I can keep a straight face, just to diverse a little bit, to the testimony of Mr. Chasteen. We've got Albert Jenner from this prestigious law firm. You can look it up in Who's Who in America. Director of General Dynamics Corporation. You can get a quick rundown of them. General Dynamics headed the funding through the banking of Fred Korth, former attorney for Marguerite Oswald. So Albert Jenner comes in here, not baby Kling, representing and knowing in Chicago corporation of this size who has a direct interest in the war, and the president has been killed. So now that the stage is set, I want to have a little fun with you today, if I can. I call it fun because I think it's kind of funny. It's April Fool's Day, April 1st, 1964, and Mr. Jenner has called in Clifton M. Chasteen. He's one of these doubles of Lee. He's one of the men who alleges that Lee Harvey Oswald was in his shop. Now, in the testimony, there's only the court reporter and Albert Jenner, the attorney from General Dynamics, on the director of General Dynamics. And he's sitting with Mr. Chasteen. This is volume 10, pages 309 to 327. And later in the room, Robert T. Davis comes in. That's the Assistant Attorney General of Texas, because Mr. Davis has to hear some very important testimony, and I'm going to share that with you, of course. But this is the scene, and he calls in Mr. the barber has come in. Now, Mr. Chasteen is asked, has he known Lee Harvey Oswald? And Albert Jenner says to him that we've called you in because we've heard that you have, in quotes, rendered some tonsorial services to Lee Harvey Oswald. That's the way the testimony begins. Now, what was the motive of using Chasteen as a witness? Just to put it precisely, because we may or may not have time for it, his opinion of Lee Harvey Oswald, and keep in mind that factually and physically, it wasn't Oswald at all. The times weren't right. The man said he was in the shop in the spring, in summer of 1963. Oswald was in New Orleans and in Mexico. He couldn't be there. He described him as being with a young boy who was 14 years old, coming in three times, and he describes the boy's clothing to make Oswald appear possibly as a homosexual. The main motive for creating this particular double was that there's a great length to describe how arrogant Lee Harvey Oswald was, and that he was interested in socialism as against capitalism, and while he was having his hair cut, he said the solution to the problems of the world would be to have one man running everything and not all these little countries making their opinions. So while he was sitting in the barber chair, he was talking generally a few times his opinion about politics. Was it possible that the man they were discussing was not Lee Harvey Oswald at all? Of course it was possible that it wasn't Oswald, because in the first place, as I say, Oswald drove up to the barbershop in a car, and the other Oswald, the classical one, didn't drive a car. Oswald wasn't in the neighborhood in the spring or summer, as I said, in April, from April 63 up to October the 3rd, 63. He wasn't in Dallas at all, and this man described times where he was coming in every week or, you know, every 2 weeks for 7 weeks, and stretching it back to the spring and summer, and that was impossible. So the time wasn't correct. He didn't drive a car. That was wrong. Oswald was never seen in the company of a young man, so that was wrong. And therefore, you would think that the Warren Commission would rule out Mr. Chasteen as a witness at all, because if Oswald didn't drive a car and he wasn't in the company of a 14-year-old traveling around talking about politics, and he wasn't anywhere in the vicinity physically or geographically, you'd think out of the 552 witnesses, the Warren Commission would have cut them down to maybe 200 witnesses. But no, they chose it the other way to make it look like a very prestigious committee had gone to the ends of the world to do their work. So how did the Warrington Mission find Clifton Chasteen as a witness even? How did they come across this man? Well, they didn't. The first thing they said, most witnesses were prepared. He volunteered that the chief of police in town was his close friend, and because he's a good friend of mine, he called me, and then Mr. Sorrells of the Secret Service came, and the chief of police goaded him on, Clifton, go on down, and so Mr. Odom of the FBI interviewed him. When Mr. Chasteen had Lee Harvey Oswald as a former customer in his chair, how did he recognize him? Well, he testifies before the Albert Jenner that at the time of the assassination, he didn't know the name of the man that was in his chair, but the first I remember seeing him or recognize, I saw his face, he testifies this, was about or before or over there around 5 o'clock. I saw the face was before, about, over there around 5 o'clock. When I saw him over at the jail or something, and I seen him when they come out there and when he looked toward the camera. So the question is, he says, when I saw his picture, and I remember him coming in the shop, but he says, when I saw him at the jail. Now, Oswald wasn't photographed at the jail at 5 in the afternoon. So did the chief of police, who was Clifton Chasteen's friend, take him over to the jail to see Lee Harvey Oswald, because we know Jack Ruby was over there Friday night at that press conference? And then Chasteen volunteered, I know where he lived. I know where the station wagon was that was parked, that I saw him in with this lady, this station wagon. Again, that's controversial to my book on the doubles, because one, Oswald leaves a book depository and goes out the front door into a station wagon, and the other leaves the back and goes into a bus and cab. And Mr. Chasteen lives in Irving, Texas, where Ruth Payne lives, and Ruth Payne got Lee Harvey Oswald the job at the Texas Book Depository by calling Roy Truly. So he's involving Mrs. Payne into this scene where the double's involved, and also when Oswald's in the jail and he tells Sheriff Craig and Captain Fritz and Hostie in the afternoon, the day Kennedy was killed, and he confirms with Sheriff Craig that he heard a car honk and jumped into the station wagon of Michael and Ruth Payne, but he said, don't get them involved in this or everybody will know who I am. So over in Irving, Texas, the barber also mentions the station wagon that was parked. I saw him with this lady in it, and I drove up there, and my land's a living. He said, you couldn't get within a block of that house. He knew the station wagon, he knew the house, and he knew Ruth Payne. I knew then, I wasn't mistaken, that this was the guy who was in my barbershop. Sometimes I saw him with two women. I assumed it was Mrs. Payne. My brother-in-law used to live right across the street from her, and I know all the people that live around her, nearly all around the Payne's house. Of course, Michael Payne didn't work for General Dynamics. He worked for Bell Helicopter, a nuclear physicist, third-generation Harvard nuclear physicist, and for that awful Nazi Walter Dornberger, Bell Aerospace, and the head of Bell Aerospace is now the Treasury cabinet appointment. Mr. Miller is a cabinet appointee of Jimmy Carter's right now. Bell Helicopter makes the helicopters for our wars, for the Shah of Iran, for every government of repression. Walter Dornberger ran that space, and that's where Michael Payne worked. So you have General Dynamics and Bell Helicopter, who made a big hunk of that war when John Kennedy was killed. But he says, I know where Michael and Ruth Payne lives. I went right over there. I know those people. My brother-in-law lived across the street. And then Chasteen says, them is the things there about Oswald that I personally, you know, that I ever paid any attention to. Them is the things there about Oswald that I personally, you know, ever paid any attention to. That's not my talking. That's Mr. Chasteen. What were the politics in the barber shop? Page 312, he says, well, I like to keep politics out of the shop. It isn't good business. The guys are always talking there, about general things. He keeps the radio on and the ball games because he likes to be informed, you know. But then this one guy came in and said, well, if you want to know what's going on, he says that there's too much money spent overseas, the conversation was too much giveaway that this country gives away, and things are going wrong. And it's at that point that a man supposed to be Lee Harvey Oswald speaks up and says, well, the solution is to have one leader over everyone else, that you can't have these little old countries around you. He says one leader takes care of every little old country, and when you don't have a bunch of people making decisions for you. And then he volunteered to say that a man like Chasteen owned a barber shop and people worked for him and gave him the money, and that everybody should have a piece of the barber shop. And of course, that made Chasteen furious. And he said, "Where in the world do you get that kind of stuff?" And then he said, "It made me so mad, I would have took one of them razor straps and tore him up," hearing that kind of talk. Now, how did they know Lee Harvey Oswald was in this shop to see the barber? Well, as I say, he wasn't driving a car, and he wasn't with a 14-year-old boy. And so how would you go about deciding it was Lee Harvey Oswald that he's so mad about? Did the commission ask about his hair or the hairline? Did they ask about his age, his height, his weight, his mannerisms? No. There were 18 pages of questions, some of the longest testimony of the Warren Commission. And Albert Jenner, the director of General Dynamics, an attorney for those people, is going to question Mr. Chasteen about one thing to identify Lee Harvey Oswald as being in his barbershop. That was his clothing. Now, keep in mind that anybody couldn't be wearing these clothing. The clothing don't identify the person. A garment could be on anybody's body. They didn't stick to the height, the age, the weight, the mannerisms, the hair. They stuck to the clothing, a jumpsuit and a pair of shoes. On the other side of this tape, just because it's so funny, I want to go into it because it's funny and it's sad, and I just think it's time to share something like this with you, the way the Warren Commission, prestigious commission, did their lousy job.